This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Widespread unrest continues to flare through Iraq today. U.S.-led forces clashed with insurgent Iraqis, both Shia and Sunni, in more than half a dozen cities. Earlier today, American aircraft fired missiles into the grounds of a mosque in Fallujah. Unconfirmed reports say as many as 40 people may have died. And the casualty toll continues to mount on all sides. If you have questions about military developments in Iraq or the United States military tactics, give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-98-TALK, or send us email, totn@npr.org. Joining us now from Baghdad is James Hyder, Iraq correspondent for the Times of London. Good to have you back on the program.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you. The U.S. military leadership in Iraq vowed to destroy the militias loyal to Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. What's going on the ground as the fighting continues in several cities throughout central and southern Iraq?
Absolutely. I was in the city of Najaf yesterday, which is completely under the control of the Mahdi army, Muqtada al-Sadr's militia. They've taken over the police stations there. The police have handed over all their equipment. I saw armed gunmen with rocket-propelled grenade launchers driving around in police vehicles. They were wearing police flak jackets that had been given to the police by the U.S. military. There were hundreds of them in the squares, in the streets, very much in control. Also in the city of Kufa, which is just next to Najaf, they were on rooftops with machine guns. They had taken over police checkpoints on the main road to Baghdad. No sign of the police. They had all fled their positions. The coalition was in base between the two towns. The two towns are very close to each other. We just saw a few American soldiers in trucks driving around close to the base, not venturing into the town. It's very difficult to see how they can get these people out because there's major shrines there, very holy shrines for the Shia there. And in addition to that, after some fighting in the town of Kut, which is southeast of Baghdad, Ukrainian forces have pulled out after one of their soldiers was killed. Several were injured in continuous mortar fire overnight. So they've pulled out, and Kut also appears to be in the hands of the Mehdi army.
Now, this is putting, as you suggest, an enormous strain not just on American forces, but on American allies.
Exactly, yes. One of the key concerns in recent months has been the ability of the Iraqi police and the Iraqi Civil Defense Corps to actually hold the line in a country which is so beset with violence. And in Kufa and Najaf, and in parts of Baghdad as well in recent rioting, we've seen the weakness of the security forces, which makes it very difficult to contemplate the handover in 3 months, even though the Americans say that, that the coalition is going to stay in massive force here. It would be very politically awkward for an Iraqi government to have foreign troops here fighting their own people whilst they are ruling under a constitution that some Shiite leaders have said is not valid in the first place.
The principal Shiite leader who has said that, the Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, today criticized the U.S. response to the Mahdi army, Muqtada al-Sadr's militia, and also called for calm. Is there any sense of where his supporters are in this?
Well, his supporters are traditionally the more moderate, better educated, better off Shias. They've been keeping fairly calm. In some parts, in Najaf, for example, that was never a traditional power base of Muqtada al-Sadr. He was regarded as largely a young upstart there. And he's now being seen as something of a hero in Najaf. But the people in Najaf, and not particularly fond of him. He's gaining, Muqtada al-Sadr is gaining popularity there, but I saw a lot of people who locked up their shops yesterday for fear that looting would take place because there's no police force and there's a militia just wandering the streets.
Now, that's the Shia part of the insurgency, which has erupted over the past few days and which is very ominous. There is also significant military action north and west of Baghdad in the cities of Fallujah and Ramadi today. Update us on what's been happening there.
Well, what we're seeing in Fallujah and Ramadi is probably the toughest combat that the U.S. military has undergone since the war. It does seem to be the what was feared in the invasion last year, which was street fighting, house-to-house battles, very close combat. The guerrillas are using rocket-propelled grenades, mortars, machine guns. They're on their home territory, especially in Fallujah. They're being helped by residents. This is an extremely anti-coalition town, very tribal city. And it's very difficult for the Marines to go in there. I understand that after 3 days of fighting and some fairly heavy losses, they've retaken about 25% of Fallujah.
And the casualty figures are very difficult to confirm, but there's clearly significant numbers of people killed and wounded.
Yeah, we're hearing that in the mosque that was bombed, apparently a 500-pound laser-guided bomb was dropped on this mosque in Fallujah. There were 40 people inside, suspected gunmen who had fired on the Marines. But also, apparently, a bomb was dropped on four houses. We're hearing more than 20 people killed in that particular strike, mostly women and children. But the problem here, in fact, the problem in general for the coalition, is that using massive military strength against the Iraqi people is going to inflame the insurgency even further. And that's why we've seen people like Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, who's a moderate, coming out and condemning what's happening, because he knows that not only is this bad for the Iraqi people, it will push people closer to Muqtada al-Sadr's camp.
Is there at this point any interaction between the Sunni and Shia insurgencies?
There are strong signs that they are starting to coalesce now. I was in a Sunni mosque in Baghdad today, in Adomir, which is a staunch Sunni pro-Saddam area. There were people giving blood there for the people of Fallujah. They were organizing an aid convoy to go down to Fallujah. And amongst those people, I found Shia fighters who had come from Sadr city, which is one of Muqtada al-Sadr's strongholds. And they said they had come to give blood for the Sunnis, and that they were all fighting together now. And Sunnis in the mosque were saying there's no difference between us now. We're all fighting against the foreign occupation.
James Hyder, I think your telephone line is telling us it's time to go. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
James Hyder is the Times of London's correspondent in Iraq, and he joined us tonight, his time from Baghdad. And with us now to discuss military tactics in the face of this spreading violence is retired Marine Corps Lieutenant General Bernard Traynor. He's the author of The General's War, The Inside Story of the Conflict in the Gulf. That's about the first Gulf War, and he's with us from his home in Lexington, Massachusetts. Good to have you back on the programs.
Good afternoon, Neil.
At the end of last week, we were waiting to see how the military would respond to the murder and mutilation of four military contractors in Fallujah. Now U.S. forces are moving through that town house by house in very difficult combat. Is this reaction called for, do you think?
Neil, I think what we've seen here wasn't just a response to the murder of the civilian contract employees and the desecration of their bodies. But I think it was represented the straw that broke the camel's back, that this insurgency that was existing in the Sunni area and now, of course, in the some of the Shia areas, had to be dealt with firmly to convince the most of the Iraqi people who were probably sitting on the fence, seeing what the outcome of this thing is going to be before they commit themselves.
But doesn't it risk, as James Hyder was saying just a moment ago, alienating even more people?
Sure. It's a high-risk strategy. There's no question about that. But then when you think about the alternative, you have to say to yourself, what do you do? Do you keep feeding the tiger and hope that he doesn't eat you, or do you go after the tiger? And I think the decision is made regardless of the possibility of short-term and even perhaps even long-term increase in opposition to the Americans, that they're going to crush these insurgent groups. And I think there's a certain legitimacy to that. That power counts for an awful lot in that part of the world. And if you exercise it, you're going to get respect. If you don't exercise it, somebody is going to take advantage of what they perceive as weakness. Now, whether that holds true in this instance is an entirely different matter.
Now, they've taken apparently the same high-risk strategy terms of the Muqtada al-Sadr's militia, the Mahdi army, mm-hmm. Vowing today to that these men would be found and crushed. Again, high risk.
Yeah, well, I think so. That's probably not quite as high risk. You just can't tell for sure. But Sadr didn't have a great deal of support, as you know, and he's kind of a renegade even within the Shia community. And I just don't think the business of getting Sadr himself is that important regardless of the fact that they put out a warrant on them? But what is important is taking down this militia and neutralizing Saada's influence and power and capability.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And our guest is Bernard Traynor, a retired lieutenant general from the United States Marine Corps. Let's get a listener involved in the conversation. Dimitri is on the line with us, and Dimitri is in Fort Lauderdale.
Hello. I'd like to ask you, military expert, on how the war in Iraq compares with the war in Algeria, where the French tried to sustain their occupation without much popular support. Because if you look at the situation in Iraq, both the army and the corps of the civil servants have already been alienated by the purges against the Ba'athist party, and the religious community has also been alienated by the occupation. So it seems that at this point the Americans have really no more support than the French had in Algeria, and a group of collaborators are certainly not going to die for the occupation of Iraq any more than French collaborators who are ready to die for the French.
Let's get a response from General Traynor.
The only analogy there is the fact that it's an insurgent sort of war, guerrilla type of war, but beyond that there's no comparison because the French were trying to maintain Algeria as a colony
in perpetuity,
as the United States is trying to, having freed them from a tyranny, is now trying to create the security and stability situation to turn it back over to the Iraqis, and so the analogy limps.
Let's get another call. This is Mick, who's on the line from San Francisco.
Good morning, Neil. I was just curious, and you talked about the reporter on the ground talked about inflaming, this kind of delicate strategy maybe that our military is using, inflaming the population and making it worse. And as the military commander there said, that you have to do something. I'm wondering, first of all, Sadr, the arrest warrant that is out for him, it seems like that would just be a huge Pandora's box. They actually arrested him. Would they have to take him out of the country? Would they have to sort of to cut the head off of that beast,
let me focus on that, General Traynor. His offices are also next to the biggest shrine for the Shias in Iraq.
As I indicated earlier, I don't think that Sadr is really the principal target here. The principal target is his power, and that's resident in his body militia. So they have to take that down, and then Sadr presumably becomes irrelevant to the situation. But, in the process, if you have to go into Najaf and fight, you're going to have a replay of Fallujah. Now, the other possibility is if the scales tip against some of these groups very seriously, then they start to look in terms of negotiations, and so that they are not completely taken out of the picture, and eventually then could come back in another venue or another circumstance to try to reassert a certain amount of power. Because underneath all of this, there is a power struggle going on, not just against the coalition forces, but between the Sunnis and the Shias and various tribal groups within both of those confessional groups for power at the end of the day when Iraq once again becomes a sovereign nation.
One final call. David, also in San Francisco.
Yes, hi. I was just wanted to ask the general if he felt that the trend here is negative. For example, are we seeing more U.S. soldiers killed, and does this al-Sadr character, does his prominence here mean that we have more Iraqis who are not with us?
Well, it's hard to evaluate. The official U.S. position is that 78% of the people in Iraq support the efforts that we are undertaking in terms of providing a new government for Iraq. I don't know whether those figures are correct or not. Clearly, there's a strong percentage in the Shia community and in the Sunni community that are totally opposed to us. But I would estimate that most of the Iraqi people are simply sitting on the fence. They're not going to tip one way or the other unless it's clear that one side is starting to emerge victorious over the other. And if it's in the case of the insurgency, if we start to back off and the insurgencies are able to establish these sanctuaries and strong points, then I think what you're going to see is kind of a mob mentality reaction and an insurgency starting to spread like wildfire all over Iraq. And this, I think, is what the coalition determined.
General Traynor, thanks very much. Retired Marine Corps Lieutenant General Bernard Traynor, author of The General's War. More on this on All Things Considered later today. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.